Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, what a northern night. Coming to you live from Bowie, Maryland. Bringing in the blues, bringing it in. For another night of Norman Night. The country feels kind of blue tonight. At least my part of the country feels kind of blue because we're here to talk about war. Nuclear war. Yeah, the kind of war that destroys the country, destroys the world, kills millions upon millions, in fact, probably billions of people. It's absolutely insane. Right now, the United States of America is locked in negotiations with the Islamic Republic of Iran about whether or not Iran is going to be able to develop nuclear power. And really, what everyone's worried about is whether or not Iran is going to develop a nuclear weapon. And if Iran develops a nuclear weapon, whether or not they will use that weapon to destroy the state of Israel. Everyone thinks that if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, then it will indeed destroy the state of Israel and throw the world into a cataclysmic nuclear war. The state of Israel possesses nuclear weapons. So if the state of Iran acquires nuclear weapons, then indeed it appears that nuclear war will result. And that is simply an unacceptable proposition. There are a lot of things that I don't particularly care about that the President of the United States has done. In fact, I think he is as warmongering a president as George W. Bush was. If you know, I was thinking this morning, I guess this is a little off the beaten path, but I went through the 20th century and I tried to find times when the United States was not at war. And there really aren't many times during the 20th century, and without a doubt, the 21st century, that the United States has not been engaged in a war. Let's start. The United States engages in the Spanish-American War. Slam, bang, we kick the Spanish butt all over the Pacific, all over the Caribbean, and the United States is suddenly a world power. We acquire territory in the Philippines, we acquire Puerto Rico, we acquire Cuba. Yes, yes, people, Cuba was once a United States possession. We can talk about Cuba another time. That really isn't. But the United States becomes a world power. We move into the 20th century. First of all, the Indian Wars were just ending. I can't remember exactly when we finally tracked down Geronimo, but it was in the early 1900s. But the big war that the Americans fought with the acquisition of the Philippines was a giant guerrilla insurgency that would be the modus operandi of most wars, except for the big one, of course, that the United States fought in the Pacific. And that really is a tough... But the United States fought a guerrilla insurgency in the Philippines probably to 1910 before it piped down for a little bit. So now the big colossal power that we are, we're going to have peace and we're not going to get involved in any of Europe's wars. Well, that lasts about, 7 years maybe. But we're preparing for war the whole time. Nobody's even pretending to make peace. World War I breaks out in Europe, and by 1917, the United States is fully involved in the war. And without United States help, who knows, maybe the last German offensive at the end of the war would have been successful. But the fresh input of American troops allows the Allies to hold. 1918, the war ends at an armistice, and now we have to discuss peace. So all the people fighting in the war, they sure enough descend on Versailles in France. The President of the United States goes over with lots of fanfare, Woodrow Wilson, and he's going to make a just and lasting peace. We're going to have a League of Nations. We're going to have popular sovereignty or self-determination all across the former empires that had collapsed and had come apart. And Wilson was going to lead the charge. Well, of course, the Republicans step in under the leadership of Senator Henry Cabot Lodge, which is a very analogous situation, as far as I'm concerned, to what the Senate is doing now, or what under the leadership of Mr. Boehner in the House and Mitch McConnell in the Senate. And they even told the Iranians before they finished negotiating anything that doesn't matter what they negotiate, they're not going to approve of it. And as soon as Barack Obama's gone, but we're getting ahead of the game. We're just tracing war. And even before the United States gets involved in the First World War, the Americans send an expeditionary force into Mexico, completely violating the country's sovereignty under Blackjack Pershing, looking for Pancho Villa, who was a Mexican revolutionary, essentially. Who actually would carry the day. So now we're into the 1920s, and the United States rejects the Treaty of Versailles. So the United States actually officially remains at war with Germany until, I think it was 1923, when the Americans and the Germans signed a separate treaty that ended the First World War between America and Germany. However, the Americans did not join into the League of Nations, which was the first attempt at some kind of, some people would tell you world government. I prefer to see it as a kind of place where the nations of the world meet to try to solve their differences peacefully. I don't know if the United States' entry into the League of Nations would have prevented the coming of the Second World War. In fact, it probably wouldn't have. Well, I don't know. The only thing we do know is we didn't join and World War II came along. And millions of people died on the battlefields and millions more millions more died in the camps of Germany. So we go, there's a giant arms race through the late 20s, a naval race into the 30s. The United States was actually getting ready to fight the British. We were going to invade Canada in the early part of the 1930s. That never really happened, but the preparations were all being put in place. President Roosevelt, again, defying the wishes of Congress, actively seeks to help the British against the Germans. Neutrality Acts passed in the late 30s, 37 or 8, I'm not sure. If somebody's got the exact date on that or like to correct any of my rough scenario here, the number is 347-945-6713. Let me see if anybody's in the chat room. Hey, guest 6411, can you hear me? This is actually a real important question. If you can, just type a yes in the chat room or give us a call. Anybody out there who'd like to join in with information, ideas, questions, the number's 347-945-6713. That is the call-in number to the Norm at Night Show, and we would be glad to have you online. So, yes, 6411, kid, you hear me? Are you following along? I hope so. Why don't you join us on the live line? I got all my lines open here. Anyway, World War II goes on from 1939 to 1945, and for the first time in the world's history, nuclear weapons are used. Guess who uses them? The United States of America. Fact, keep in mind as a background of all of this conversation about Iran and Israel, that the only nation in the world who's used nuclear weapons as an act of war has been the United States of America. We dropped two atomic bombs on Japan, one at Hiroshima, the other at Nagasaki. No question, nuclear weapons are just amazing way to kill people. Hundreds of thousands of people die in seconds when a nuclear explosion takes place over a populated area such as Hiroshima or Nagasaki. It was awesome and horrendous. Horrific is the word I guess we use nowadays. Demonstration of a people's power. And that's very sad. And we need to think about that as Americans. We're the only nation who ever did it. Was there a justification? I don't even want to get into that argument now. The fact is, we did it. Did we have to? I don't know. We did it. And after World War I, United States troops were stationed in two different places in Russia during the White and the Red Civil War. And we took sides in that Civil War. And, of course, we started a long tradition of taking sides in Civil Wars and our side losing. Yeah, we picked the whites, the reds won. And there's lots of other examples. So World War II ends, and then we go to China. The reds and the nationalists fight a war for the control of China. Who do we pick? The nationalists. Who wins? The reds. Then sort of a couple of years of peace in 48 and 49, though the French are trying to reestablish their colonies all over the world, and they get in just bloody civil wars in Algeria and in Indochina, or what we currently call Vietnam. And the United States, before we get involved in Vietnam, get involved in a dispute on who's going to control the Korean Peninsula. There were the communists in the north. There were the, I guess we'll just call them, for lack of a better word, the capitalists in the south. The next thing you know, I'm talking to you on a Samsung phone. That's pretty funny. The next thing you know, giant war breaks out. North and South Korea fight. The United Nations steps in to try to solve its first conflict. The only reason it could do that is because the Russians happened to be absent when they took the vote, and so the Russians couldn't veto it. But three long years of war, nothing gets settled. The border ends up being pretty much exactly where it was when the war started. There is a North and South Korea to this day. The North Koreans, they want a nuclear weapon. And supposedly they have one. Another place where negotiations were underway seemed to have some success. But Korea ends, and the United States gets involved right into the Vietnam War. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever been down to the wall or the Vietnam Memorial, but over 58,000 Americans died in Vietnam. And that was really, really sad. But again, all of these wars, essentially, except for World War I and World War II, the formal wars, if you would, and the Spanish-American War, are fought without a declaration of war by the Congress of the United States. When I read the Constitution, it's pretty clear. It's also pretty clear to me that the only time the President of the United States is the Commander-in-Chief is when we are in a state of war, which we always seem to be now. But anyway, so why doesn't somebody give me a call? I'm getting tired of this recitation. It's been going on now for about 20 minutes, and I need somebody to talk to. But anyway, Vietnam We started getting involved in 1954 with the I can't remember the peace treaty. When the French were defeated in a giant battle in a place called Dien Bien Phu, and then there was a giant conference to decide what would happen in Vietnam, and of course it gets divided in the North and South. Ho Chi Minh and his Reds in the North, again the capitalists in the South. Wars fought for years and years and years. Our side loses again. Because if we don't take a stand in Vietnam, then the communists are going to overrun all of Southeast Asia and the war will be over. I mean, in our way of life will be over. And the United States finally signs a peace treaty. We go all the way to 1974, when we signed the Paris Peace Accords and run out of Vietnam with our tail between our legs. Richard Nixon is the president at the time. Henry Kissinger negotiated the peace. So Vietnam ends, and maybe, just maybe, we're going to have peace. The other really interesting thing that happened after World War II, for the first time in United States history, the vastly expanded military forces of the United States are not disbanded. We keep a large standing army, and so now the president has something to be commander-in-chief of. Giant Navy to protect freedom of the seas, giant and expensive. So the 70s, wow, are there any wars for the United States to get in the 70s? Oh, in the 50s, we're ready to go to war against the British and the French in the Middle East over the Suez Crisis or the Suez Canal. The British and the French were going to try to take back the Suez Canal from the Egyptians. President Eisenhower was ready to fight the British and the French over the Suez Canal. Anybody who disagrees with any of this, why don't you just give me a call? 347-945-6713, and we can discuss it. I don't pretend to be God. This is my recollection of the history of the 20th century, which for me was essentially a century of war. And in the 80s and the 90s, we had the Bosnian incursion. The 90s especially, that was President Clinton. We get into the 21st century, and we've been at war since 2001 when the buildings got knocked down, and there doesn't seem to be any end in sight to it. President Obama is going to be the president of peace. God bless it, he's got us in more wars than George Bush could even imagine. President Obama's probably got us in wars in places that George Bush couldn't even find on a map. And so the 21st century is indeed a century of war. We have been at war for most of the 21st century. Excuse me. So now the president of the United States, the Middle East is a mess. Every place we touch blows up into insurgent nationalist explosions, a different culture. And then the whole ISIS thing, I'm going off on tangents here. They don't even live in the same century. that we live in as far as their mindset goes. And it really is sad what's happening across the Middle East. We're at war. We're always at war. We spend more money on a war machine than the whole rest of the world spends on theirs. Our war machine is involved all over the Middle East, while the Saudi Arabians, who have the third largest army in the world, do nothing but get rich. I had a friend who once called the U.S. Army nothing but Saudi mercenaries. And I got blamed for saying that, I must admit, even though it really wasn't me. Though I didn't agree with, I didn't disagree with him. And one of the original Normet Knights was actually shut down over that remark. Back in the day before Black Talk Radio, when it was just easy to connect, I'm still waiting for a call from someone. 347-945-6713. 6411, you're still in the chat room. Why don't you give us a call? 347-945-6713. Well, anyway, so now the President of the United States, we get into domestic. Hey, I got a call coming in. Here we go. Love it. Hey, you're out with Norman Knight.
How's it going tonight?
It's going pretty well. I hope you've been listening to my little dissertation on the century of war.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I caught a bit of it. Then I had to go outside and I came back in. And I think you got as far as World War One or the Philippines.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, we got the 21st century has been a complete century of war. We've been at
I remember reading a statistic that, I'm just guessing the numbers, I think, of the 239 years the country's been existing, there were only like 20 or 30 where we were not at war. So, you know, I'm not exact.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's something similar to that. I don't have the exact numbers, but
I figured about 80 of the 100 years of the 20th century we were at war.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot, again, what's your definition of war was...
It's when our soldiers are shooting at somebody else's soldiers and people are dying on both sides. That's
okay.
War.
Yeah, but I'm talking about things like, I don't know, Nicaragua, Honduras, Grenada.
That's a war. That's
these
a war.
Wars. Okay.
I didn't
even
talk.
They aren't police actions.
No, they're wars.
Yeah, how about covert operations? You count those two?
War!
You don't know, but you don't know even know what's going on. I mean...
Well, the mother of the guy who comes back... The mother of the guy who comes back or the woman who comes back in the coffin knows.
Yes, well...
It's
okay, well,
war.
You know...
But
right,
anyway,
well.
I didn't even go into the police action.
Yeah,
but
because if we go with that, we don't have a Korean War, do we?
No. Although,
that's right.
Tell somebody who was at the Chosin Reservoir that it wasn't a war.
Oh, I know. My Uncle Ron fought in Korea, and he always likes the story. I think it was the story of, was it Porkchop Hill? Or Hill 39, it had a number, maybe.
It was a great movie made about Porkchop Hill.
Yeah, I'm aware of the movie.
I saw it at the...
But But I, as I recall, it was a hill that had no strategic value whatsoever, although the Koreans did occupy it, the North Koreans.
Mm-hmm.
And enlisted men started questioning why they had to take this hill. And the officers had to come and tell them, do you know why we're taking this hill? Just to show them that we can do it, that we're willing to do things like this. In other words, we're willing to do crazy crap, sacrifice our lives just to make a point that we're crazy people and we're willing to do things like this.
No, the whole thing was just, and that brings us to the real topic at hand, which is the negotiations between the Americans and the Iranians.
Yeah.
About nuclear weapons and the crazy, insane things that the Congress has done simply because they don't like the fact that the president is black. There, I said
it
down on the air.
I don't remember that coming up in any speeches, but...
Excuse me. They didn't say it in a speech.
Yeah. You know, Norm, the whole racist thing, I don't put much credence in that. I don't think it's an issue.
Oh, so then explain it.
What do I have to explain? It's not an issue that
explain the visceral opposition to anything the President of the United States does by the Republican Party.
Yeah, he's the opposing party.
Find another time in American history. Well, there were two other times, actually.
Yes, there were, of course. It all depends on the Republican leadership. They felt, especially after 2008, that election, that they may lose control over everything. And
they are!
But, no, I said they thought they would lose control over everything because they would not have a majority in either house. They don't have the presidency. It was conceivable that the Democratic numbers would grow, and then they could get all their judges in. I mean, think about it, a filibuster-proof Congress. I mean, that's a big deal.
Well, first of all,
they were terrible.
Nobody ever makes them filibuster. All you got to do is make them do it a couple of times and it will stop.
Yes, I know. Well, you know.
Okay, you're going to threaten the filibuster. Start. Go ahead.
Right.
Start.
Well, it would be, another meaningless action, like trying to repeal the American, the Affordable Care Act 54 freaking times. And that's just the House.
And you're telling me that this isn't about race?
That particular one, unless you have evidence, real hard evidence, you can't make that statement.
Yes, I can.
You can, but it's just speculation. It's innuendo.
It's not innuendo.
You suspect that, John Boehner is a racist? Or is he a racist? Do we have evidence that he's made racial disparaging remarks?
Look, I don't care about remarks. Remarks don't mean crap. It's
How about his
actions? It's
actions
that matter. Inviting inviting the Prime Minister of Israel to the United States to make a speech and violating long-established policies of the country in order to do it.
And you think he did that because...
He did that because Barack Obama is black. Yes, I think played a giant part in what he did. And unfortunately, and this is the hard thing to separate, I don't think Barack Obama is a very good president.
No, I think he's one of the worst. Almost as bad as Jack Kennedy. But
I don't know if he's one of the worst.
Okay.
But I do know he's bad.
Yeah.
Wait,
let me run this by you.
Yeah,
okay.
All right. Hey,
we have an election.
Else? Okay, hold on 1 second. Anybody else that wants to join in here? 347-945-6713 is the number. Come and put your 2 cents in, fellas and ladies, because it's getting hot. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. We have an election coming up in Israel next week on Tuesday. Very tight.
Okay.
Close. Yes. Netanyahu
right.
could lose.
Yes, he could.
Now, do you think that he came over here to stir up all kinds of anxiety about a nuclear Iran, because that's how the conservatives win in Israel? As soon as you get into self-defense, that's how they stir it up, and that's because whenever there's tensions or conflict of any sort, Israel always turns to the right. And if there's nothing going on, they go to the left. So that's they've always been like that, you know. So, do you think it was not a political move, purely political?
Of course it was a political move. It would not have been made if Barack Obama was not the president of the United States. People don't believe he can do anything right. The one place where he may have been effective is with foreign policy, although most leaders in the world have completely outperformed him.
Yeah, well, he doesn't, you know, let's face it. You know, the State Department and the Defense Department are packed to the rafters with neoconservatives now. All that happened when Bush got in. He opened the door for them, and they took every kind of position they could find, and they determined foreign policy.
Well, the president, and plus the president of the United States has very, I believe, weak people surrounding him in his national security.
Oh, absolutely, so, yeah. You know, I mean, he started out with all these leftover Clinton people, to include Hillary yourself. he's pretty bad at selecting people for positions, and at the same time, he delegates. There's a tremendous lack of competency. Let's just say that. He does not handle any of these things well.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a... If Boehner would have done, if I was the president of the United States, okay, and Boehner had done what he did, I would have recalled the ambassador immediately.
Right. I think, last week we were talking about this. And
right,
I think Obama should have reacted much strong. You know, there should have been a strong reaction to it. He chose to be the nice guy, but, you know, here we are. He made his choice. But, yeah, I would have don't come
really
over here to win votes for yourself in Israel. And it is funny because I had just read an article earlier this afternoon that said that he gained in the polls in Israel, and now I'm reading today where it's he's lost, and it's like dead even.
Well, it was dead even. He wouldn't have come here if it wasn't dead even.
Well, I think it's always been close. You know, I don't really follow it. You know, let's face it, it's another country. I don't get involved in their politics particularly, but let's face it, their relationship with us is extremely important. It's the most vital thing going on other than their own survival. So, and in fact, they're very closely linked. So I think my thoughts on, the race issue, just, I don't know. That's a little too far out for me. I don't think you can support that at all.
Well, I think that it is very clear that there's something about Barack Obama that makes them hate him.
Yeah. Well, there's something about Hillary that makes everybody hate her. What is it about her?
Actually, I like Hillary, but I like Hillary. I like Bill. They're just the past. I don't want them around anymore.
Oh, it's like watching House of Cards with those two. I think the show may have been modeled after them, you know?
Well, I think there's a little Bush in there, too.
Although Frank Underwood is Frank Underwood is a far better liar, I have to admit, you know.
What I am afraid of with Barack Obama is he's just not very smart.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, there are smart people who don't know how to use the information. I also suspect, and I think we're getting close to the time frame where, you know, the last year of the presidency, maybe he's doing it a little too early. But they tend to kind of let things slide and kind of enjoy the view, you know. Things start slowing down. Things aren't quite as urgent anymore. I'll be out of work in January, you know. I'm arranging my book deal for $10 million advance, you know. Yeah, so, I mean, that's about it. And, of course, he'll do the speaking tours and collect many more millions that way, but
I won't pay to hear them.
Oh hell, I've listened to him. I'd rather there's nothing. He does have good style. I mean, as an orator, he does well.
All his speeches are the same.
Yeah, but they're good. You know, he does manage to get the crowd moving, and it's not a preacher quality or something like that. It's, you know, he seems to be in tune with the audience. When, as soon as he gets there, he picks up on stuff. So if he has any really skill, that's definitely a skill that he has. But, yeah, the whole business of running a country and delegation, and it just doesn't, you know, he never got the knack for it. And you can see what happened with ACA. I mean, that was probably...
All right, well, okay, we've gone way off topic here. I didn't want to talk about whether or not the Republicans... The question that I have, Barack Obama is the president of the United States.
Uh-huh.
He is conducting the foreign policy of the United States. We don't know what they're talking about in those talks. And for the Senate, to come out and say, and they had said this, no matter what he brings back, they're not going to approve it.
It depends. I don't know what he's going to come back with.
So why should the Iranians even talk to us?
Well, they just got some of their money back that had been that we froze in bank accounts here. Somewhere in the range of $4 billion, I think. Now that was a result of negotiations.
To you and me, $4 billion sounds like a lot.
Yeah, and to Iran it is a lot because they're very, very limited.
See, the President of the United States, if I'm President of the United States, the Russians, for instance, let's just take the Russians. The Russians are suffering mightily, not because of our sanctions. They are suffering because the price of oil has collapsed.
Right.
I would flood the market. We have giant reserves. I would flood the market and drive the price down even farther.
Well, you would, huh?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah. Yeah, do you know what happened the last time that happened? Only
what,
it was
Kuwait
and the Saudis. Oh, we lost about 10% of our oil and natural gas domestically. Took a long time to rebuild that, too.
What? There's tons of oil.
Yes, but if you're capping wells, if you're not continually exploring and drilling new wells, you run out of supply.
Stop. We are the largest oil producer in the world. Why will nobody recognize that?
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty much common knowledge.
Okay, Russia,
we did that last year.
Okay, let's play chicken here. We're going to keep driving down the price of oil. So you sit down and talk with us in a realistic manner.
Yeah, well, they have three trading partners, India, China, and Japan. And they can sell all they produce. They're not getting very good prices, but they can sell as much as they can get out of there. They're having problems with India, for one. India wants to trade with them. They want to trade commodities, wheat in particular. So, that you know, Iran wants cash, and the Indians said, well, how about if we give you wheat? You know, you can make bread. God. But
the Russians cannot afford for the price of oil to continue to collapse. They cannot afford it.
Right, right. Well,
neither can the Saudis. And the other thing, you know, all this ISIS crap. The Saudis are Wasabi Muslims, They and ISIS go back to the 1930s.
Well, let's put it this way: the Saudi family wants no part of them.
Not true.
Really?
Really?
Well, they threatened to come in and take over Mecca, and what's the other holy city? Medina.
Yes.
So, what would you say to that?
I say that the whole tradition and civilization of that brand of, Islam, That brand of Islamist. But that whole Wahhabi philosophy is what
the
Wahhabi founded the.
Yes,
it's what they founded the Saudi state on.
Well, here, you know, I understand that they are spreading this all over the place, to include the United States, by the way. We have plenty of those schools here, too. But when it comes down to, you know, is that family going to stay in power and do all the wonderful things that it does and enjoy the wealth? And let's face it, the wealth of that oil is dependent on trade. The security of that oil is dependent on the United States. For that matter, we've been importing less and less from them.
We don't have to import oil. We're the largest producer in the world. We import oil to keep our allies happy.
Yeah, well, if it were only for domestic use, you'd be perfectly right. But as long as we have to maintain a military the size that we have to import oil.
We don't have to import
oil. And that there's other elements of the oil, or let's just say the energy market, that I don't know that you're fully aware of. You know, we don't export oil, per se. We export a lot of finished product, jet fuel, gasoline, specialty oils. So while oil is coming in, quite a bit of oil is coming in, but a lot of oil is also going out. You know, there's a whole circle going here. Now, once the LNG plants and terminals are set up, that's when the liquefied natural gas will start going out. And that's where you're going to see the production. That'll mostly be in the Gulf of Mexico. Although you're going to get one up your way, I think, in Delaware.
Oh, there's tremendous natural gas production from the Great Lakes.
Well, yeah. But they've got to get it to the market. And the market is not the Northeast. It's part of the market.
No, the natural gas will be exported.
Well, of course. You can get 3-4 times the price in Europe or Japan. Of course they're going to sell it over there.
But the fact of the matter is, if you want to fight the Russians, their vulnerability, I mean, unless you want to mix it up for real with guns and missiles, their weakness is the price of oil. They are dependent on the price of oil. They will squeal like a pig if you continue to drive down the price of oil.
Tell me something. Have you ever cornered a possum?
Have I ever cornered?
Cornered a possum.
No.
You know, now, for the most part, a possum wants nothing to do with you. And it may play the dead thing and let that
nasty scent
out and do all of that. But if you really corner one where all those options are gone, then you know what you got?
No.
A marsupial with more teeth than any other animal on the planet. Do you get my point? You don't want to force them. You do not want to corner them. You do not want to make them behave irrationally.
I don't believe the Russians will react irrationally.
Oh.
In fact, I think that Putin is the most rational leader that we deal with. And that's why
yeah.
he's making a fool out of us.
I guess you must be reading the different or getting your news from another source, because I don't see.
No, I'm not. I'm watching what happened. I'm watching what is happening.
Yes.
And I'm connecting it to the history that I know.
Okay. Well,
what's his name? What's his first name? I can't even think of it.
Vladimir.
He is acting exactly like a Russian. Has acted for the last 900 years. He hasn't done anything that the Russians have not been doing since they threw off the Mongols.
Yes. Well, let's put it this way. How many times during the period of the Cold War were the Russians where they ran out of food? They were actually threatened with starvation. Or hunger, we'll just say hunger.
The Russians have been threatened with starvation for 900 years.
Yeah, and how many times did we send all freighters full of wheat and corn over there?
That's because
to keep them fed.
You couldn't sell wheat. It's because you couldn't sell wheat for anything over here. So we took our surpluses and unloaded them in Russia.
Well, we've been doing this with a number of countries, and they are countries that are on the verge of, you know, being irrational. North Korea, certainly there's an example, but we did it with the Russians several times that I recall. And again, it's a matter of this, you know, if I'm in the country and I've got a large army and no food, what am I going to do? I'm going to go find some food. Which means I'm probably going to take it from my neighbor.
No, they want to take the land. Where do they grow the most wheat in Russia? In Ukraine!
Well, of course. There you go, bud. Now, that battle's been going on for an awful long time, of course. But, you know.
But anyway, we got about a minute here. I think that the Congress of the United States is acting in a traitorous manner by what it has done to the president's position in the negotiations.
I wouldn't use the word traitorous. But I'm not happy with what they're doing. Well, if it were truly traitorous, then I suppose we'd start investigating and issuing warrants and things of that sort, don't you think? Maybe a few arrests might, wake them up.
Well, no, that...
You're the one talking treason. Okay. Now, I've seen these on this before.
I know,
they're just trying to stir the pot.
No, this is a definite, the whole thrust of things in the United States, the presidency has assumed vast amounts of power. And now the legislative branch is trying to take it back, particularly since the man with all the power is black.
Oh, okay. We're back to the race thing again.
Yeah,
okay,
you got 20 seconds. Okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree and continue to talk about it next week, because we are in the last 10 seconds of today's show. And it was great, and all you listeners out there, and I know you're out there because you're in my statistics, call in next week.
I was going to say, I have a couple friends I could ask to call in.
Absolutely.
They are they tend to be libertarian conservatives like me.
Well, that would
I don't
be
know that
magnificent.
I
you don't know
okay,
what?
Well,
hey,
I'll
could you hear
that.
Me all right tonight? Because I tried something
yeah,
new.
In the beginning there were a couple little silent bits, but...
well, yeah,
that's because
I was silent.
But that may have been the show loading. You know, it may have...
Well, there was a lot of things. But anyway, it was great tonight. I'm getting back in the whole swing of things. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Guy, you have a good week.
You too. Bye-bye. We're out of here. We are out of here. What am I doing wrong? Anyway, let's just end the episode. There's another Norman Knight wrapping up. I'm a little bit over. And we'll talk to you next week. We're out of here.